That's a tough act to follow, I tell you. Now we're going to talk about evaluation. That's what we feel like throughout this entire initiative. There's so much enthusiasm and innovation and excitement happening through Start Strong. It's been a pure joy and honor to be involved in, but I tell you what, we have been continually fed and energized as evaluators by just hearing about all of the engaging and exciting and enthusiastic engagement, both from the people up here as well as all these young people embracing this work. So just want to, I guess, start off on that note. My name is Stacy Cutbush. In my prior life, I was a teacher and involved in service delivery, and then became increasingly interested in what was happening with young people around these relationships when I saw it in my classroom and started moving towards public health research and prevention. I work at RTI with this fabulous team up here. We all are all ensconced in teen dating violence prevention research in a variety of different initiatives and projects funded by several different clients, for lack of a better word. Again, I want to echo also that we're excited that you're all here. I know you bring your own commitment, enthusiasm, experiences, and expertise, so I'll try to be brief with my comments so that we can preserve ample time for question and answering. Please jot down any questions you have. Also, I do have for you, I printed out copies of this, so if you want to grab one, make any notes as we're going through, that's fine. And I also did want to point out that the very first introduction that Lucia gave at the beginning, I did notice there was a typo for my email address. So if you do want to follow up with me, please be sure to get a card up here. And I'd be happy to answer any additional questions that you may have or learn more about your recommendations and the work that you're doing. So with no further ado, I will jump in here. No relationships to disclose. We are working from the framework that the CDC puts forward in terms of defining teen dating violence. There are three primary components to that. It's defined as physical, sexual, or psychological, or emotional. Some people use emotional, some people use the word psychological interchangeably. Violence within a dating relationship, as well as stalking. And of course, particularly with middle school youth, we define dating very loosely. That could be sitting next to somebody in the cafeteria, or oftentimes it's not even physical engagement, you know, a proximity. It rather occurs online or in those kinds of forums. It may occur in person or electronically, as I just noted, and then, of course, between a current or a former dating partner. We have, of course, youth risk behavior surveillance data indicating that 1 in 10 youth nationwide reported being physically hurt by a boyfriend or girlfriend in the past 12 months. As my co-presenters have pointed out here, one of the really important aspects of this initiative and the data that we have, we're in a position to be able to share at this time, is that we're looking at middle school aged youth. And of course, we began this conversation with adult intimate partner violence, domestic violence, and then said, oh, let's talk about these 18 to 22 year olds. And now let's look at what's happening in high school. So it's very exciting to see this field moving the prevention efforts even further down or upstream towards middle school aged youth. And as I'll show in just a moment, we are seeing some startling, on the one hand surprising and also not so surprising demonstration of aggressive behaviors. So I'm going to give you a little bit of a background overview for those people who are interested in the research. As part of the Start Strong initiative, RTI is conducting an independent evaluation. This is a competitive grant that we were awarded through the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and also through the Blue Shield of California Foundation. The evaluation consists of three different components. There's a student effectiveness evaluation, teacher effectiveness, and then also a big policy evaluation, both quantitative and qualitative, looking at all of these efforts aimed at shifting some of the outer layers of the onion in that social ecological framework that Debbie alluded to earlier. However, this presentation shares data only from the student effectiveness evaluation. Moreover, it is specifically confined to baseline data findings, so I'll just be presenting to you a snapshot of the data, the baseline, the pulse that we were able to gather. We are in the middle of crunching the subsequent three waves. There are four waves in total. I'll talk about that momentarily. It is a longitudinal, despite the fact that I'm only going to present baseline data, I wanted to just present the evaluation design, if you will. It's a longitudinal quasi-experimental research design. We have 8 participating schools, middle schools, that are participating in this data collection effort. 4 of them are Start Strong schools, 1 from Bridgeport. So you saw the map earlier of all the different sites. We identified 4 schools who were willing and able to participate in this data collection effort, 1 in Bridgeport, 1 in LA, and 2 in Indianapolis. We identified 4 comparison schools across the country in efforts. Substantial efforts, let me tell you, were made to identify comparable schools based on a variety of characteristics, including race and ethnicity, gender, of course, and percent free and reduced lunch. We also looked at geographic location and also other characteristics of the city, including the size of the city, as well as some of the more socio-historical context of the city. For example, if they were kind of burned out industrial towns or something like that, we really looked at a lot of characteristics in our matching. There were 4 waves of data collection, which is really exciting. So not only are we moving the needle to look at these middle school kids, also having longitudinal trajectory data, one of the things that we will be very excited to be able to offer to the field to move the science forward is simply a snapshot of trajectories, even just to look beyond the program effectiveness at the what these kids' behaviors look like. Even if we're just looking at this control sample, I think that's going to be an important contribution to look at normative. What are the normative trends for these behaviors in middle school? Again, though, much to our dismay, we will only be presenting Wave 1 data to you today, and that is at the respect for our clients, our mutual funders' request, that we wait until we have all 4 data and waves of data fully analyzed so that we can present the entire picture at once to all of the scientists here and as well as media outlets. So that will be forthcoming. I do have cards. I hope that you will stay followed up because we've got really promising results in terms of the outcome effectiveness, program effectiveness. 1,430 kids from 8 schools in 4 states. Those of you who are involved in school-based research recognize the challenges of getting into the schools, getting parent permission from kids. So we did face challenges there and had a range of 44% to 71% across the schools. Once we got the parent permission, we did have high success in the act of consenting among the students who were present. Data was collected during the 2010 and 2011 school years. Again, there were 4 waves, so we surveyed in fall of 2010, spring of 2011, and then fall of 2011, spring of 2012. So we've just finished cleaning that 4th and final data set and are wrapping up analysis soon. Paper and pencil questionnaires administered in groups at schools, dependent upon the local requests, whether they had it in a cafeteria, in small group settings, et cetera. Again, these were 7th graders that we began with, and we followed that cohort. So it was 1 cohort of 7th graders that we enrolled, and we followed them at all 4 waves through their 8th grade year. But we'll be presenting this data for the 7th grade at the time, 12.3 years. Clearly a balanced mix of gender, female and males, and then here's our demographic spread. We were excited that we were able to have such a diverse sample to work with, and that was, of course, part of our plan to pursue that diversity. Consistent with other teen dating violence research, we've collected data on a variety of proximal indicators, or constructs, if you will. So many of these, if you're involved in the research or programmatically, you'll recognize some of these constructs. If you have questions about them, please do note that, and I'll be happy to review them. Otherwise, they're fairly straightforward in terms of looking at gender stereotypes, the kids' attitudes, their acceptance of teen dating violence. A lot of these are more cognitive attitudinal indicators, though some of them, like sexual harassment, are behavioral. Peer victimization or perpetration of teen dating violence, so that's witnessing or knowing friends that have experienced these behaviors, witnessing relationship violence in their own lives, whether it's young people or adults, parent-child communication specifically about relationships, teen dating violence, behaviors, victimization, and perpetration, looking at physical, psychological, and electronic aggression. We did not include items in our instrument on sexual violence, and that was challenging and difficult, and I wish we could have had that data, but we had a lot of pushback from communities and schools, and that's understandable. But at the same time, we know that sexual violence, perpetration, victimization is happening among these youth, and so it was unfortunate we were not able to gather that data from these young kids. Also consistent with the measurement, we utilized existing measures in the research. Many of them came from Vanjie Foshee, so those of you who are involved in this literature, or excuse me, this research, will recognize her as being the program developer for Safe Dates, which was one of the two evidence-based curricula that schools schools had the choice of implementing, or sites, rather, not schools. Some of the items include, for example, having been scratched or slapped, hit you with their fist or something else hard. And I included alphas on those scales if you are interested in that level of psychometric properties. And I also just wanted to mention, I brought one copy of the instrument, so if you have a burning desire to come flip through it after this presentation, you're of course welcome to, and you may follow up with me also if you have additional questions. Just going to kind of skim through this. Also consistent with a lot of the coding so that we can begin to get that, I keep using the word consistent, because it's important when we're having this conversation that we talk about measuring the same thing. So we're looking at one or more times measuring dichotomously. Same with the psychological or emotional dating abuse. Also measured using five items. A couple sample items included insulted them in front of others, threatened to hurt you. Also coded dichotomously and taken from Vanjie Foshee's research. They were modified slightly for this, shortened. The instruments were shortened. A lot of electronic dating aggression came from a study that Pickard did in 2007. These were a couple sample items up here, very similar to the types of items, constructs that are asked with the psychological aggression, but within the context of using cell phones, email, IM, texting, blogs, or social networking sites. Incidentally, I will mention as a side note that I did present some data on the electronic dating aggression, specifically on Sunday afternoon, and I have some extra handouts. So if that is something that you're interested in, feel free to come grab one of those too if you didn't get to check that out. So we learned that, as you may not be surprised, dating is common among the seventh graders in our sample. This is what we learned, and this was lifetime. Have you ever had a boyfriend or a girlfriend defined very loosely? And, of course, many of them said yes. And so for all of these people who have been saying, oh, middle school is too young, you know, we can't be having this conversation, it's really great just to be able to say, no, really, we need to be having this conversation, as I'm sure all of you in this room are well aware. Okay, so this is a little bit dense. The next four slides, bear with me. Hopefully you've got something to read along, so if your eyes glaze over, just stick with me, but it is a lot. There's a lot on the slides, and at the risk of reading things to you, you know also for research, we must be really clear and precise with our language. So I'm going to stick to some of what's up here. What I will say before I go through each of these is that first I'm going to present some baseline data on the proximal indicators before we look at the behaviors themselves. And in order to keep the scale intact, we've generated composite measures. If you want to know more about how we derived those measures, please feel free to follow up with me. I'm not going to get too nitty-gritty in those details. But we did not want to present item-level responses, and so rather we've generated scale-level responses. What we can say about gender stereotypes, which is one of the key proximal indicators that has been demonstrated to predict teen dating violence behaviors in the scientific literature, is that a large majority of students have harmful gender stereotypes about the roles of males and females. Nearly 2 out of 3 students strongly agree with at least one gender stereotype, one harmful gender stereotype, such as girls are always trying to get boys to do what they want them to do, or with boyfriends and girlfriends, the boy should be smarter than the girl. So we were seeing fairly prevalent, and surprisingly so, ubiquitous, if not ubiquitous, endorsement of harmful gender stereotypes. Perceived negative consequences of teen dating violence. Sizable minority of students, stick with me with this wording, a sizable minority don't perceive there to be negative consequences from acting violently towards a dating partner. So there was a chunk of kids who thought, no big deal. 1 in 4 students strongly disagree with statements about the perceived negative consequences of TDV, such as, you know, they don't agree. If I hit a boyfriend or girlfriend, she's going to break up with me. And that was alarming, to have 1 in 4 kids think, that won't happen. I can hit my girlfriend or boyfriend, and they're not going to do anything. It was disconcerting, of course. Acceptance of teen dating violence, again, this is another proximal indicator that's very strongly linked in the literature to ultimately preventing teen dating violence. Students are far more likely to believe that it is acceptable for a girl to hit her boyfriend than for a boy to hit his girlfriend. And we thought this was really unfortunate because, of course, we want all kids to think that it's not okay. So this is some of the only gender data that I'm going to present to you. Half of students strongly agreed it was okay for a girl to hit her boyfriend under certain circumstances, like if a boy makes his girlfriend jealous on purpose, that half of them thought, well, it's okay, she can hit him. We did not see that same high level, we saw a lower level with the boys. Fewer than 1 in 10 strongly agreed that it was okay for a boy to hit his girlfriend under similar circumstances, such as a girl who makes her boyfriend jealous on purpose should be hit. So we're, you know, theorizing that maybe this has something to do with this generationally inherited chivalry code. You know, that they're, and it doesn't match up with the behaviors per se, but at least in the thoughts, they're thinking, oh, well, it's not okay for a boy to do this, but it is okay for a girl to hit, which is, of course, disconcerting because we just don't want any of our kids to be doing these things. Sexual harassment victimization, very common among the students in this sample. And to be clear, this is not just among dating partners, this is all kids. Nearly half of the students report having been a victim of sexual harassment in the past 6 months, such as being touched, grabbed, or pinched in a sexual way, or having had someone make sexual jokes about them. Nearly half of seventh graders. Peers in teen dating violence. We were very interested in looking at what's going on in their peer culture and their peer groups, because, of course, as you know, in middle school, they've got this hurting mentality, right? Many students are aware of peers who have been victims of teen dating violence or who have been physically violent to their partners. I'm going to ask you to just not get too focused right here on this because I think it works better to look at it. So I'm going to jump back, but just take a look. This is what that said. In the last 6 months, how many of your friends have had a partner who was physically violent to them? This was not subsetted to only kids who had been dating. This was all the kids. And how many times have you seen a girl or boy being physically violent to a person they were dating? I'm going to back up. It's common for students to have witnessed youth being violent to their dating partners. More than 1 in 3 have witnessed boys or girls being physically violent to the people they were dating. And this is just past 6 months. Last of the proximal indicators, parent-child communication. Good news. We have some good news, and that is that they are talking with their parents about dating and about social media in general. 3/4 of kids told us in the last 6 months they sometimes or often talk to their parents about dating topics, such as how to tell if someone might like you. And nearly half of them say that in the past 6 months, they sometimes or often talk to their parents about using social media, such as what kind of information is okay to put on your Facebook page about yourself. However, I do want to note that this does not refer to dating partner specific. There were some items on that scale that were not circumvented by dating partners. Okay, so this is probably, I presume, what you may be particularly interested in. We certainly were. Looking at the teen dating violence victimization among seventh graders, this is what we saw. And this is past 6 months only. This is not lifetime prevalence rate. So past 6 months, kids are reporting, 37% of them are reporting emotional or psychological victimization, 15% physical, and 31% electronic. I would point out to you first that this is not a nationally representative sample. Like the YRBS data that I presented earlier on. However, it is higher than that national data. The youth risk behavior surveillance suggests about 10%, and that's in high school. So we're looking at middle school, and we've got 15% here. Perpetration, 20%. We've got fewer kids reporting perpetration. That's either because of social desirability bias, right? They know that this isn't a good thing to say about myself. They don't want other people to know, even though it's confidential. And or we've got fewer kids who are perpetrating to more people. So just a couple of concluding slides. Clearly, the majority of middle school kids have had or do have a boyfriend or a girlfriend. I think that point cannot be underscored enough to get folks to agree or recognize, yes, we need to be having these conversations now. And consistent with previous studies, our results are showing that these type of teen dating violence behaviors among adolescent dating partners is common. So clearly, we want to incorporate more of this into health promotion programs, more teen dating violence prevention, or the flip side of that is healthy relationship conversations into middle schools aimed at promoting and preventing, and also to include teen dating violence in existing policies about bullying or sexual harassment, looking at some of the other ways to try to get into that conversation among middle schools and other youth-based venues. And of course, to evaluate prevention programs to determine what does prevent these behaviors. So again, this is just a snapshot of the baseline data. There will be more, and there will be more soon. And I really do hope, I presume since you are here, this is something near and dear to your hearts and your minds, and that you'll stay tuned for the program effectiveness data. Some limitations from it, of course, it's a convenient sample, so we can't say, make broad sweeping statements about all kids everywhere. This is just for our sample. It's cross-sectional data, so we can't presume any inferences here. And then finally, as I just mentioned, these are self-reported behaviors. And with that, particularly when we're talking about violence, there's typically some social desirability bias.